This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 91 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm going to start this week's show with something everyone cares a whole lot about, a programming note. Now that the fantasy football season is coming to an end, you won't be hearing my annoying voice three times a week. The goal is to do two podcasts per week, similar to last offseason. One on a random topic, and then one mailbag show each week. I'm still planning out the random topic shows, so if you have anything that you'd like me to cover, definitely hit me up via email at jj@numberfire.com. I've got a lot of ideas, but I'd love to cater them towards what you guys actually want to hear. Like I said, the fantasy football season is coming to an end. I'm completely drained, so I'll be taking some time off over the holidays to spend some time with my family, and I hope all of you are able to do the same. It's been a really great season, though, and my favorite part, aside from Kareem Hunt, of course, has been sharing this passion for fantasy football with all of you. It's been unbelievably enjoyable. Before we get into this week's mailbag questions, I wanted to let you know that this holiday season, FanDuel has partnered with the NBA to give you a free contest where you can win autographed NBA gear, NBA shop gift cards, or even five tickets to an NBA game. It's called the Christmas Jam, and you can enter for free on Christmas Day. And best of all, it features a brand new game style called Starting Five. In a Starting Five contest, you pick just five players, two guards, two forwards, and one center. It'll make for some very interesting lineup choices, especially since it doesn't distinguish between point guards and shooting guards, or between small forwards and power forwards. So give it a go. Try it out for free in the Starting Five Christmas Jam contest on December 25th. For more info, visit FanDuel.com/NBA. That's FanDuel.com/NBA. All right, now let's take a look at these questions. This first one's an email from Brandon. He says, "Hey JJ, what's the biggest thing that you learned about fantasy football this year? Also, what was your biggest miss this season, and what do you think contributed to that miss? How could it have been avoided? Thanks, man, Brandon." Oh man, my biggest miss easily was DeAndre Hopkins. I thought that given the probable quarterback situation entering the year, now obviously I didn't know that Deshaun Watson was going to be a stud, I just thought that given that quarterback situation, DeAndre Hopkins was bound to see a season like we saw last year. I never doubted DeAndre Hopkins' talent. It was just a situation. And there have been good studies done to show that rookie quarterbacks really are bad for top wide receivers. So even if Deshaun Watson was under center from the start of the season, I wouldn't have been all that confident. And obviously, I wouldn't be confident with Tom Savage. So I missed on DeAndre Hopkins. And I even missed when I thought that DeAndre Hopkins was a sell after Deshaun Watson's injury. I do think that the Texans' defense being pretty brutal contributed to this. It was unexpected that they were this bad. That'll force more negative game scripts and more passing. The Texans' drop back to run ratio is 1.35 this year despite the horrible quarterback play, which is about where it was last year, but I figured that it would be lower given the way the defense looked on paper and the draft selection of Deontay Foreman. I missed on DeAndre Hopkins though, that one stung. I also missed on seeing the Rams' offense take this big of a leap. I wrote them off for the most part. I still have Todd Gurley in fantasy football because, as I've said many, many times, I play fantasy football knowing that I'm going to be wrong. So I draft a large variety of players and treat my leagues as a giant portfolio. But if I only had one or two teams, there's no way that I would have owned Todd Gurley. With that being said, I think that plays into what I learned this year. We often overstate the impact that coaches can have in fantasy football. But a lot of that is overstating things like how a wide receiver one gets fed in a certain offense or how running backs are targeted a lot in certain offenses. Offenses still have to be driven by good personnel, you guys. The bigger picture is what I'm talking about here. That's what's more important here. When you get a brand new coaching staff, it's important to reevaluate players who may have small sample sizes and who have looked pretty bleh in the past. I didn't give the Sean McVay move enough credit entering the season, and now, to me, he's very easily been the best coach in the NFL this year. Now, I've been fine in the past with doing this for individual players and their team situations and scheme fit. For instance, I didn't love Alvin Kamara coming out of school because I know, statistically, good running backs at the NFL level handled a relatively decent workload in college. Not having that on his resume was a really big ding for me. I was worried that things wouldn't translate to the NFL. But after Alvin Kamara was drafted by New Orleans, I actually tweeted, quote, "Literally the perfect spot for Kamara, a guy who wasn't going to carry a significant load at the NFL level, he'll do crazy things in NO." Obviously, NO being New Orleans. So even if I question the transition from college to pros, I recognize that he fit really well in that scheme. He fit really well in that New Orleans Saints offense. Basically, what I'm saying is, I care just as much about situation as I do pure talent, or workhorse talent when it comes to Alvin Kamara. and situation can often be driven by coaching staffs. That's a huge takeaway for me this year, to not simply write off a giant leap from an offense if big changes were made, to at least be cognizant that those things can happen. This next one's from Twitter, at AustinChalice2. Who do you think will be the late round quarterback to get in 2018? So it's obviously early for this, but the first guy that jumped into my head when I read this question was Marcus Mariota. He's been banged up throughout the season and just has not looked like himself. I think we can all at least tell ourselves a story that his down play has been because of the injury, or at least partially. But I also think that there could be coaching changes in Tennessee this offseason which could really help his cause. Most importantly though, Mariota has had some really stupid touchdown luck this year. In year one, he had a 5.1% touchdown rate. In year two, that jumped to 5.8%. Both of those are above average numbers, and maybe they were bound to regress a bit, but Mariota's touchdown rate is now 3.1%. That's incredibly low. Meanwhile, his yards per attempt has only dropped by 0.4, going from 7.6 over his first 2 years to 7.2 this year. I think there's some positive regression coming for Marcus Mariota, and his price is going to be really low next season because most fantasy owners will not see that. This next one's an email from Josh. He says, "Hi JJ, this may be too early to ask, but I'll give it a shot. I've seen a lot of discussion this week on how next year's draft will likely be heavier on running backs in the first round. People are thinking the likes of Hunt, Kamara, and Fournette could go before Antonio Brown, which sounds ludicrous to me. I suspect you don't think that will become an actual thing, but I'm curious, which PPR running backs do you think deserve to be drafted before AB next year if there are no shakeups? I personally have four, Gurley, Bell, David Johnson, and Zeke, because they get goal line work and do a lot in the passing game, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this. Thanks as always, Josh." I love how each year, whatever happens the previous season, that's how drafts go the next year. It's amazing. It's honestly a huge reason that I wrote my ebook, The Late Round Quarterback, 6 years ago. Because that 2011 season was insane for quarterbacks, so everyone started drafting them early. Guys, five quarterbacks had average draft positions in the first round and a half in 2012. Five! This is just what happens. People love to overreact. I cannot right now envision a scenario where I'm taking someone like Alvin Kamara or Kareem Hunt over Antonio Brown in a fantasy football draft next year. That seems not ideal. I can certainly see why you tried to snag someone like Gurley, Le'Veon, David Johnson, and Zeke, but there's a clear drop after those players given their workhorse roles and the fact that each one of those players has proven to be difference makers in fantasy football during their careers. We've obviously got plenty of time to talk about this stuff, but the number one thing to remember is to not overreact based on what happened in 2017. This next one's an email. It says, "Hey JJ, absolutely love the podcast and your work. The education that you give on process is invaluable. Thanks. I am curious about regression and how we assess players who move from average to elite over the course of their career, or those who move in the opposite direction. You talk about regression coming for a player like Kareem Hunt or early season Will Fuller, one expecting positive regression and one expecting negative. In both these cases, regression expectations were met. How do you deal with players for whom that regression never comes? Is that what defines an elite player or a bust? Thanks, Jesse." So there are a couple things to first keep in mind with regression. First, football is a small sample size game. Since you're only getting 16 games out of these players, and really 15 because we don't play fantasy football in week 17 usually, there are instances where regression just doesn't hit like we plan for it to hit. That's usually when you get these massive busts like Marcus Mariota, who I just referenced, or when you get Matt Ryan's 2016 MVP campaign. They're outlier seasons. But I think another important piece to this is that with regression, we're looking at the extremes. There's some gray area here. If someone has 0.5 fewer touchdowns than he should based on, say, his receiving yardage totals, I'm not all that concerned about that guy. He could have fewer touchdowns because he's not a red zone threat or because he's in a bad offense with bad quarterback play. I won't have an urge to investigate that further. If a player has like 6 more touchdowns than he should, then regression becomes more obvious and I'll be more confident in it, like a Will Fuller situation. So I guess what I'm saying is, it was literally impossible for Will Fuller to keep up his pace. Regression was bound to come. Kareem Hunt's a little different because things like the offense living and dying by the big play or the offense just not performing as well were both at play. But you have to hashtag trust the process and hope for a turnaround. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come. But more times than not, it will. And fantasy football is all about probability. This next one's from Twitter, at Joe Son of Joe. "How, if at all, do we approach the injury epidemic next year? Or do we just hope when it happens, it isn't one of ours? Sounds like we're talking about our children or something. So this falls under the philosophy of, I'm going to be wrong, so I should adjust for that. As you guys know, because I talk about this all the freaking time, a huge piece of the late round quarterback strategy is opportunity cost. When you take a quarterback early, you're foregoing the opportunity of drafting a high-end running back or wide receiver. Each round later, you're playing catch-up, and your depth at those important positions is not as strong as other teams. When you wait, you can pound running back and wide receiver over and over again, which will cover your ass when there's an inevitable injury or a complete bust at the position. You have to play under the assumption that an injury will happen, not to a specific player, but just in general. It's why you shouldn't just roster fill during your draft. You should be building up depth at both running back and wide receiver. This next one is from Matt. He says, we have a home field advantage rule that allows the home team to sub out a player if they outperform the starter. We have the option of picking two backup players, and if you are the home team and one of the players outperforms a starter of the same position, the backup player that provides the highest point differential gets inserted into the starting lineup. Anyway, I wanted to get your opinion on whether you thought this was a good rule. The rule is some way controversial in our league, and I wanted an outside opinion. Thanks again, Matt. I'm probably going to give a pretty dumb answer for this, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad rule, because what this does is that it rewards teams that were good in the regular season and it gives them an edge in the playoffs. There's nothing worse than having the better team in the playoffs but getting knocked out because it's a single elimination tournament. I think it's kind of a fun wrinkle that probably makes things a little bit more fair. But I will say this, two players to choose from off your bench seems a little much. I would prefer just one. This next one is from @NinoCapo. Do you buy into narratives? It's hard not to consider them as part of the process. I heard you mention it on your transactions podcast in reference to Gillislee versus Buffalo and couldn't tell if it really impacted your decision. Okay, so I'll start with this, and analytical people will probably hate me for it, but I do think that there's another gear that humans can inherently shift to when there's something bigger on the line. But here's the thing. I also think that people often overstate that shift in gears when talking about narratives because there should be enough motivation to be good already. Like, it can exist, and maybe it would add a little something to the end result or a player stat line, but I'm sure there are folks who then blame the narrative for literally everything that happens on the football field that day. Just because someone performs well against a former team doesn't mean it's solely because that player had extra motivation. The dude is in the NFL, he's got motivation, and if he doesn't, he'll lose his job. Like, the angry Tom Brady narrative is one that drives me absolutely insane. People think that he'll play well because he's angry at something, like when the NFL suspended him. Guys, Tom Brady is one of the fiercest competitors the NFL has ever seen. Tom Brady is unbelievably good at quarterback. Being a competitor and being really talented at what you do, that's what brings good results. Not being angry. So no, I don't really believe in narratives. I think it's fun to talk about, but we should realize that plenty more narratives don't pan out than the ones that do, so there's usually a lot of confirmation bias at play. This next one is from @Karch10K. Do you play Dynasty? Ever plan to do any Dynasty content? I would absolutely love it. Yes, I do play Dynasty, and I love Dynasty. Now that the offseason is here and I've got to fill a podcast schedule for an additional 3 months than I did last year because this podcast started in April last year, I'll probably throw some Dynasty podcasts out there. If any of you guys have something that you'd like to hear about, again, shoot me an email. This last question is from Craig. He says, hey JJ, I'm the commissioner of my home league, and we had an instance where a guy dropped both Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson after he lost his playoff matchup last week. Because he dropped them on Wednesday, I'm not sure many people saw that they were on waivers. Unfortunately, one of the playoff teams acquired both players. Had I seen the move, I would have blocked it for the integrity of the playoffs. What if everyone just dropped their best players because they didn't make the playoffs? It would totally distort the results of the season-long work. Do you think this is a punishable offense? I plan to pose it to the league to decide. Help me out here, JJ. Is my buddy Dan a douche? Thanks, Craig. Yes, Craig, your buddy Dan is a douche and a sore loser. So this email was sent to me obviously before things happened with Aaron Rodgers, but the point still remains. If you're out of the playoffs, don't do things to impact the playoffs. If you're a commissioner in this scenario and someone objectively elite like Le'Veon Bell is dropped, you need to take action. That's one instance where I'll step in and do something as a commissioner because, like you said, Craig, it ruins the integrity of the league. And then I'd kick Dan out of the league. That'll be it for this week's mailbag episode. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And please leave a rating and review on iTunes. At the end of the month, a random reviewer's name will be picked to win a NumberFire premium subscription for a year. And as always, feel free to follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and I hope that you all enjoy your holiday weekend.